Hey, this is Glenn. Remember those awesome promos that John and Zilpha did for the Mormon Expression live broadcast on Friday, August 6th? Doors opening at 6:30 and the live recording starting at 7. And remember when John and Zilpha said, "If you ain't got no dough," but that you still need to reserve your tickets in advance? And remember when Tom was reading fake emails and he said a bad word and he bleeped it? That was awesome. Oh, yeah, and the judging for our first ever essay contest is now underway. The winner will be announced soon. Someone's going to win $100. An easy number to work out for the tithing. Because remember, if Heavenly Father gives you 10 cookies, you need to give him one back.
Well, welcome to another edition of Mormon Expression. I'm your guest host, Tom, and today I'm also joined by Glenn Oslin, one of my favorite active Mormons. What's up, Glenn?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Great, thanks. Thanks for joining me tonight. And today we have a special guest, Melissa Leilani Larson. Did I say your middle name right?
You did. Gold star.
Leilani. Cool. Melissa is a playwright and a screenwriter, and she's also directed and produced many plays. And she has quite the resume in theater, and so we brought her on primarily because of one particular play, Little Happy Secrets, which is primarily about LDS culture, or I guess it's mostly based in a Mormon kind of setting. Would that be fair to say, Melissa?
Actually, very specifically in a BYU setting.
Yeah, BYU setting.
Excellent. So, yep.
So why don't we go ahead and get started? Give us a little bit of your background, Melissa. What, maybe some of your church history background, and maybe what led you to be involved in theater.
Well, I've been a lifelong member of the church. My mother is from the Philippines, and she converted to the church in her mid to late teens, and then came to BYU Hawaii. At the time, it was Church College of Hawaii. And that's where she met my dad. My dad is a lifelong member. And I was born there. I was born in Hawaii, and we lived there till I was about just before I turned 13. My dad always wanted to work at BYU Provo, and he had a job opportunity at that point. And so we came to Provo. I went to high school and in Orem, and I got my undergrad degree in English at BYU, emphasis in creative writing. And I'd always loved going to the theater, I'm addicted to going to the movies. just for kicks, for fun and, you know, kicks and giggles, I took a playwriting class my senior year at BYU from Elizabeth Hansen. And there was a proverbial cliche light bulb that went off. I had a really hard time with it at first because it's a very different form. I had always planned on writing fiction, on writing novels, and playwriting was a completely different thing, but it just felt like it was what I was supposed to be doing. But then it was my senior year and I graduated. It's like, well, what am I supposed to do now? I found this new thing. So I just started immersing myself in theater. I actually went back to BYU and started a master's in theater history, and then decided, because that wasn't a terminal degree, that I should get a terminal degree, a Master of Fine Arts. And so I was accepted to the Iowa Playwrights Workshop in Iowa City. And that's where I earned my MFA, finished that program in 2007. And so I've been for the past, oh dear, since undergrad finished. So for the past 12 or 13 years, just been writing for theater and film, and been working on plays, producing plays, going to so many plays, and it's just kind of become my life. Theater is my life, and that's cliche, I know, but cliches start with a crumb of truth.
Very cool. So when you were getting involved in this, you just decided that playwriting was going to be your dream. Did you originally intend to kind of have Mormonism as your theme, or have a kind of BYU LDS culture in some of your plays, or?
At first, no. At first, I absolutely refused to. while I was a student at BYU, my goal was to, well, my goal was to be famous. and so, you know, to be rich and famous, to be a famous writer. And it seemed to me that the Mormon market was a very much a niche market, and very small, very compact. And one of the personal difficulties that I have always had with a lot of Mormon art is it seems to be very exclusive. It seems to be for Mormons and for Mormons only. And I wanted to aim for a wider audience than that. I wanted to be, you know, in a bigger pond.
Right.
And so I kind of at first refused to write about it. Little Happy Secrets, which is very much immersed in BYU culture and is about a BYU student. Actually, I wrote that play while I was in Iowa City during the final year of my MFA program. It just kind of happened one night. And I came to a realization that, you know, one of the important things when you're writing is to, there's an adage, you should write what you know. And I've been around BYU for so much of my life, and I have been LDS all of my life, and it just seemed like there had to be a point when I would have to write about it, and it wouldn't be fair to myself or to my faith or to the culture to not write about it at least the one time. And so I've kind of done a 180 in that regard, because I think the play is really important. It's been important to me to write it personally, and so but at first, yeah, while I was at BYU, I refused to write for that audience, and I had to go somewhere else to discover that it was the right thing to do.
When you wrote that, Melissa, did you feel like you were writing it to an audience, or was it something you were just more writing for yourself?
When I first started it, I was writing it for myself.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of, it grew. And at first I thought it was for a non-LDS audience that could be hopefully appreciated by an LDS audience. But now I think it's the other way around. I think it is for an LDS audience, but it can be appreciated and understood by a non-LDS audience.
Well, I know that there might be a certain degree of our audience that may have not listened to the play, and we'll be sure to put links up there. So I'm hoping that we don't give too many spoilers in our discussion. Oh, so
no spoilers.
Okay. So I encourage you, if you haven't listened to the play and you listen to this, stop and go back and listen to the play, or listen to it right after. It doesn't really matter. But there's definitely, as far as the Little Happy Secrets play, which I'd really like to discuss, it's quite controversial, and it kind of takes an off-centered approach into the LDS culture. I'm trying to understand what led you to write about that. I mean, is it based on true events? Is it based on just your own inspiration and imagination?
It is what I like to call and this is a made-up term and it's a little cheesy, but I think it fits. It's a speculative autobiography.
Okay.
Everyone's like, what does that even mean? I was thinking about when I was writing it was that one of the really important things you try to do when you're writing a play is you're trying to, or any kind of character in any context, is you're trying to get inside that character as much as possible. You're trying to express them as honestly and wholly as possible so that they come across as a real, whole, rounded person. And what's interesting to me about Claire, who's the protagonist in Little Happy Secrets, is that she and I have a lot in common. And I kind of approach the story, the perspective, if this was me, how would I deal with it? And so that's what I mean when I say it's speculative. It's like, it could be my story. It's not my story. If my life had gone that way, it could have been my story. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes total sense. That's an amazing ability to be able to put yourself in that perspective and with that much detail. I was very impressed.
Well, she's the one that has, as a character, it's been the most successful experiment. I mean, that's something you try to do with all of them. And it's easier it's easiest to see those parallels when the character is contemporary, you know, and when you have some very obvious, I mean, you know, she loves Jane Austen, I love Jane Austen. There's some very obvious things that line up. And then there are the less obvious things and the more subtle things. And so she, it just kind of was a really natural fit. And so it was really easy for me. Actually, it started out easy, ended up kind of hard, because it's a very difficult, there are some very difficult things that she deals with in the piece. And so you just kind of have to take it really personally. Otherwise, you can't expect the audience to take it personally.
Yeah, this is interesting, because how I even got introduced to this was a friend emailed me this play, and I'm not a play guy, so this actually says a lot. I mean, he sent me this play and this audio play that you have online, and I listened to it. And it's only about just over an hour long in length.
Yeah, it's about an hour. I think it's an hour 2 minutes.
Yeah, and I'm listening to it, and at first I was taking a little back. But by the end of it, I mean, I was literally choked up. I was amazed at how well it was written, and to get a guy like me who primarily likes sports to enjoy an audio play like that was very impressive. So I think you should be commended for at least getting me to connect with it. That was very well done.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Tom, you're sounding like Carter.
Am I?
Yeah, okay. I just had to throw that in.
We might have to talk a little Iowa football later, but it's right. All good.
Yeah,
I listened to it last night, and I have to agree with what Tom said. I was really moved by it, and I went and I commented on your website, and I think I'm the only one on there now. I was surprised.
Good.
Yeah, I saw like 347 at the bottom, and I thought that's how many comments there had been. So I thought mine would get buried on there, but
I think it's just hits.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So,
if you'd like to, thank you for leaving a comment. That's exciting.
Oh, yeah. No, it was great. I really liked it.
One of the worries I have, like, just like putting it out there as far as the audio play, which was a friend's idea. Also an idea's friend, was you kind of wonder if anyone's gonna, you know, I mean, I'm glad that you heard about it, like someone sent you the link to it, that it's getting around, because it's really hard for me to just kind of sit back and wonder, you know, are people listening to it? Are there hits? Do people start it and stop it, you know, and decide, oh, this, you know, this sucks rocks and I'm going to go do something else. And so it's really heartening to hear that people are actually, you know, listening to it and are touched by it, because it's just kind of the scary thing about the web is it's so cool. It's so accessible, but then you just put stuff out there and you never know who's going to find it.
Yeah. If you don't get any direct feedback, which is another thing that I'd like to ask about, whether you've had positive or negative feedback. But before we get to that, you know, I asked you previously if I could play just a small snippet. It's about a minute and 25 seconds long, I think it is. And this is Claire that's talking a little bit about Mormons and secrets. And this is in the play Little Happy Secrets.
Let me tell you something about Mormons. Latter-day Saints, if you prefer. I prefer. We are tremendously good at looking like we're keeping secrets, keeping things on the lowdown. We're so good that when the secret comes out, it's almost like a sin's been committed, like something dreadful has happened, even if the secret is innocent. That's what we do. That's why people think we're weird. Peculiar, as Brigham Young said. People assume we have something to hide. They always have. Sure, there are the sacred things, the things that get spat upon by those who don't understand. But there's a difference between sacred and secret. What secrets there are, we keep them from each other. How we're doing, what we're doing, it's like if something happens, you don't want the ward to find out. But then you have friends and neighbors and roommates, and everyone whispers to everyone else and everyone guesses. That's the worst, when everyone guesses. Because then it all gets blown out of proportion, and sometimes you have to spill the beans just to stop people talking. But even then, they don't stop talking. It's like a switch has been flipped, and everyone knows there's a secret, so they treat it with care, though that doesn't stop them from telling each other. They broke up, and he came home from his mission early, and she's bulimic. You don't want everyone in the ward to know the ins and outs of your life, so you try to keep them to yourself. And it's not like everyone's gossip crazy. It's more of a concern thing, you know? The ward, the congregation, It's like your extended family, especially when you're away at school. So, naturally, everyone worries about everyone else. Though sometimes, you can't help wishing that people would keep their worrying to themselves. Maybe we actually suck at keeping secrets. But see, this... me? This was a secret. The kind that is a constant weight getting dragged from here to there. And you wonder why no one's noticed it. No one's questioned it. The best way to keep a secret, Latter-day Saint or otherwise, is to keep it. To not tell anyone. Pretty simple. I've kept this a secret. I haven't told anyone. Not till my sister and Brennan. Now you. I suppose it doesn't matter anymore.
So Melissa, that clip where Claire is describing secrets and how that kind of portrays in the LDS culture, and how every Mormon just keeps secrets, and that I think that's a very underlying message in the play and in the themes that are inside the play. Why don't you give us kind of a brief synopsis or background of this play and some of your thoughts about that?
Well, the play is about, let me say really quickly that clip features the actress, her name is Laurel Sandberg Armstrong. Okay. And she did the recording of the play, as well as we did a staged version for a weekend in March of 2009. And she also played Claire in that staging and did a really wonderful job. The play is about a young woman, Claire, who is a recently returned missionary, has come back to BYU to finish her studies, and has a really, really good friend at BYU, her roommate Brennan, and she wonders whether or not she is romantically and or sexually attracted to Brennan. And so that's what the play is about. And I understand that it is a controversial topic for members of the church and for considering recent events in the United States as a whole for non-LDS people as well. There's kind of a really interesting dichotomy happening right now in the country as far as the relationship between members of the homosexual community and members of the LDS church. And I think that the idea of secrets, the difference for me between what is sacred and what is secret, what a lot of people outside of the LDS church don't understand, that they think that there are secret, you know, secret crazy rituals happening in the temple and in the church on Sundays, you know, that there's all of these crazy, wicked things that Mormons are doing behind closed doors. And that's really not what's happening at all. I mean, the difference is that what is happening is just so sacred that to speak of it in the wrong context does damage, you know, is a sign of disrespect to the faith, to God. And as faithful members of the church, we don't want to show that that disrespect. And I think it's really interesting that that in a lot of cultures, but specifically in the Mormon culture, we have this really interesting kind of almost obsession with secrets, with what's happening in our lives and in the lives of those around us. Like when you go to church, your ward is supposed to be like a family, you know? And when you will even have secrets between family members, both in your immediate family as well as on the ward family level. And so for me, Claire is a very quiet person. The fact that she's at a place where she's sharing a story that she's been holding inside of herself for so long with an audience, that she can tell that secret now because no one in the audience she's not affiliated. You know, she doesn't know. Sometimes it's easier to tell a secret to a room full of strangers than to your best friend. And I think that's kind of one of the main ideas of what the play is about.
Yeah, I think at least every Mormon is very accustomed to the dangers of gossip. So I think they can relate to that very well.
Yeah, my younger brother left the church when he was in high school, and he's grown up maybe for the last 15 years or so. He and his wife always associate gossip with members of the church. And you know, I don't necessarily think that gossip is a characteristic of Mormons, but he sure does. he sees it that
it's,
way.
It's interesting because I think that gossip is one of those interesting words. I mean, just if you just think about gossip being the way that information can travel so quickly, like wildfire, like the whole ward will know something happening. I mean, it can be both a bad thing and a good thing in the Mormon culture. I mean, because by the same token, what Claire is talking about in that monologue is that, you know, you could have a personal secret in your life that you don't want people to know about, but and then all of a sudden everybody knows about it. At the same time, though, there can be that reaction where everybody knows about it. The ward can come together as a family and be really, really super supportive. I mean, the same thing happens when a tragedy happens. If a family member dies, all of a sudden the whole ward knows about it, and the whole ward is working towards supporting the family that is suffering. And so there are both good and bad sides to that coin.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the homosexual theme in the play. Yeah, I think it's interesting that you were willing to, broach this subject or this theme and also kind of push it towards the LDS audience. You had to have known going in that you were going to get mixed reactions, both positive and negative. What exactly were some of the reactions that you got to hear from some of the audience?
Well, yeah, when I mentioned earlier, I was a little terrified to do it. I was a little terrified to do it in Provo. And then part of me was still saying it has to happen in Provo. If there's anywhere where it has to happen yeah. here. And I was worried about it. I was worried about people. I don't know. I mean, maybe I was thinking that I was, you know, it was going to be this huge deal and there were going to be people picketing outside. I don't know. I have a crazy imagination. But what happened was when people actually came to the show, the response in general was really, really positive. I mean, I was terrified because I just didn't know how people were going to react to it. I mean, I had a hope that people were going to connect with Claire and understand her story and hopefully be a little bit more open-minded toward people dealing with the issue of same-sex attraction, which is the vocabulary that's used. And so, because at first, you know, we played the show for 4 nights and things were really slow at first. It was like really close friends and family who were good and supportive and came to see it. And then the word got out and the Saturday matinee and the Saturday night show. And then we had a closing night show on a Monday night. And the Monday night show was filled to overflowing. We had to add extra seats. We got a standing ovation. And after each production, we had a brief talkback session where we actually offered the audience the opportunity to ask questions, you know, if they wanted to stay to talk about it. And there were some amazing personal reactions that I was just really touched by the fact that people were willing to share with me. I had complete strangers come up to me and say, "I'm just going to hug you. Is that okay?" Wow. And I said, "All right, that's great. Please do." For weeks after the show happened, I received emails, both signed and anonymous, from people who said, "I can't believe you got it right." They said, "This is my life. How did you know? This is what my life was." Some really pretty potent reactions. That final Monday night, one of the audience members was a mother whose daughter is dealing with the issue of same-sex attraction. And she got really emotional and she was very, very, the talkback session almost had a feeling for a little bit of a testimony meeting. It got to the spirit got to be really, really potent in the room. And she was, I just had no idea. I just had to hope that people would appreciate the story and not walk away from it and not say, "Here's a play dealing with homosexuality and there's no way that homosexuality and the LDS church could mix well. So I'm just going to turn and walk away." We didn't have any walkouts. We didn't have any. I actually have not had a really startlingly bad reaction that I've heard about anyway. I've just had some really positive run-ins with people who have enjoyed the piece or been touched by it.
Were you expecting maybe some hate mail or hate phone calls?
I was expecting hate mail. I was expecting people to say, and people did ask me the question before seeing the show. They're like, "Why would you want to write about this? You've got to have other things you want to do than write about this." And that's not necessarily, it's not necessarily hateful when they ask that question, but there's an honest curiosity. It's because I think they know that there's, you know, the controversy is there. And I'm not someone who says, ah, ha, ha, let's go controversy. Ha, ha. Let's get people. I want people to egg my house. See what gets people stirred up. But I was surprised at how well it actually has gone over. It actually, people tend to react, the general, I mean, not general in the sense of the most common response has been people saying, I didn't want to go, but I'm really glad that I did.
Interesting.
People are always asking me, they're like, so you have to be gay, right? Because you couldn't have written the story if you weren't gay. And my answer to that is, well, it's called writing.
Yeah.
That's my answer to that.
Well, I've got to say, listening to it, the thing that I was impressed with the most were the times when Claire would go into her prayer. And, you know, you mark the difference with the these and the thous. You know, we have this traditional kind of prayer speak. And, you know, so you can see a definite marked difference in the dialogue, but also the attitude that she has is very real. I mean, it's very realistic, having, you know, been through this experience of being a Mormon. And you always have this in, or at least with me, there's this internal dialogue with a Heavenly Father that's really probing and questioning and self-correcting, and, you know, it's like the personification of guilt in some senses. And I just thought that was brilliant.
Heavenly Father, make me stronger. Help me endure. Show me that thou lovest me, that I'm worth something to thee. Heavenly Father, I'm trying to be good. I think I'm good. Why this? Is it even a sin? To wonder, to care, to want. That's where the sin comes in, doesn't it? The wanting. The fact that I want something I can never have. Well, I'm not the one that put her there for the wanting. You know what I'm saying? Forgive me, Father, for my selfishness. I don't know how I turned this to be about me. I didn't mean for that to happen.
What were you trying to accomplish with that prayer? Were you trying to say anything other than just that this is how she's dealing with this issue?
Well, I think that there have been so many plays that have been, you know, coming out plays. And the vast majority of them are written by guys, about gay men coming out of the closet. And usually, the vast majority of plays dealing with a gay man coming out, if the LDS church is involved in that story, he's going to leave the church. You just kind of know that that's what's going to happen in the play. And I got really tired of that. Well, A, because there are so many of them. Sure. I mean, I'm sorry, you know, I'm like, let's write about something else. Mm-hmm. And B, because I didn't wholly believe that that was the case. I mean, if you are raised in the church, like I've been raised in the church, if you have a testimony, it's really hard to just turn it off. You know, it kind of seeps into everything of what you are, who you are. It influences your decisions. It influences who you hang out with and who you want to be and the choices that you make, as it should. You know, that's what a good testimony is, to help you, you know, eventually point your life to being like Christ. And so for me, I just wanted to be as much as possible in every aspect with the play as honest as possible. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to just say I prayed about it. Because from a dramatic standpoint, that's really passive. Right. Nothing's happening, yeah. You know. And then also I wanted a prayer, because prayer for me is a really personal. That's what it is. It's a personal conversation. It's a dialogue with the Heavenly Father. And so I wanted to be as honest and true to that as possible. And part of it was just like, at first I was a little bit anxious about it. Some of those scenes just kind of came out and I looked at them in the rewriting process and was like, it's going to get me in trouble. but then it didn't seem right to take it out. And so I had to leave those there because they do seem to me like some of the moments when Claire lays her soul the most bare. And it should be that way when you're on your knees and talking to God. That's the way it should be. You know, he's the one that you shouldn't be keeping secrets from. And yeah. Did that answer the question, or did I kind of like beat around that bush?
That was awesome.
Yeah.
That was great.
One of my personal favorites, as we're talking about favorite parts in the play, is when Claire tries to come out to her sister. And she explains that, and her sister reacts, I don't know how to explain it, poorly maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Very negatively originally.
Right.
That to me felt very real and heartbreakingly real, I guess I would say. And when you said that have been some of the audience members that have come up and said that you nailed it, how did you describe my experience? Have you gotten any feedback that your play, that there are people that are actually living through this life, and do you feel a deep connection to people that are really struggling with homosexual feelings inside the church?
I do have a connection with it. I don't think, I think it's unfortunately something that people want to just assume is taboo. Like if someone is dealing with that issue, if someone is dealing with, no matter how, how spiritually on top of things the person is, if they were to say, I'm dealing with same-sex attraction, then there are a lot of people who just want to automatically turn the other way and just kind of assume that that person is doing something wrong. And I think there's actually a portion in the play where that's what, actually, I think it is the scene with Natalie, with her sister, where Claire says, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing. Right. I just feel differently. And I think and I don't want to trivialize homosexuality. I don't want to say that it's a trial. But some people define it as a trial. But it's something that certain people are dealing with. Other people are dealing with, like Natalie is dealing with, with personal loss in her life. Like people deal with losing people. People deal with getting their hearts broken. People deal with economic strife. Everyone has a different trial that is supposed to make them stronger, make them a better person. And I think that we in the LDS culture need to remember that Latter-day Saints dealing with same-sex attraction are Latter-day Saints. We need to be compassionate toward them, just like we're compassionate toward everyone else. We can't expect them to return that to us, to be understanding of us and what we're feeling if we're not reciprocating that. And so the difficulty with Natalie, she was the sister, is I didn't want her to be completely homophobic. I wanted her reaction to be kind of like a gut instinctual reaction that she kind of grows out of. And I hope that comes across in the play. But so I wanted Natalie to be to have that difficulty that Claire was worried about, worried about that acceptance. And if she's having that difficulty within her family, I also tried to establish that she and Natalie aren't super close to begin with. So there's not a creation of a rift. It's just, one more thing about them that's different. And so, because I think that's Natalie kind of represents the way that a lot of LDS people who have never had an interaction with a gay person might react if someone in their family said, I think I'm gay.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder, it's also kind of timely that your play came out a little after that whole Prop 8 thing and mm-hmm. this same-sex attraction or homosexuality is actually a very touchy subject within the LDS church membership recently.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, and so it's actually pretty timely that you wrote this play. I assume that the Prop 8 thing didn't really have much to do with your intention of writing the play, right?
No, the play has been, it was bouncing around in my head a lot. It actually started as a film way back, way, way, way back, an idea for a film in like 2002. And the beginning, the seed of the character, Claire was there, but the film, the script, it was bad. It was really bad. It was just embarrassing. And so I just put it in a drawer and I put it away. And I came back to it again when I needed to write a one act for a special topics class in Iowa. And that was in the spring of 2007. So it was drafted completely before Prop 8 happened.
Maybe it's a little bit prophetic, maybe. Anyway. But so what are some of the other plays? I mean, is this the only LDS theme play that you've done or that you're working on, or are there other ones?
This is probably the only one that is directly LDS in nature and in tone and in, you know, dealing with a lot of straight up LDS doctrine as an integral part of the story. I do have an interest in writing about spirituality. And so I think I do have other plays that have LDS-ness kind of woven into them, but this is the only one. Little Happy Secrets is the only one that is quite blatantly LDS. I have a play called Martyr's Crossing, which tells the story of Joan of Arc from the perspective of the two voices who talk to her. They're the voices of, she supposedly heard St. Catherine and St. Margaret. And it definitely, that play definitely has an LDS spin on it. The theology is very, very Mormon, but it's not presented necessarily as a Mormon play. I have a play. The play I wrote for my thesis for grad school is a magical realism comedy called The Church of St. Pinky at Katy, Texas. And it's about a woman who has the power. She can heal by laying on of hands, but she is not a religious person. And it's how she deals with miracles and how she deals with spirituality at the same time that she kind of refuses it refuses to allow it into her life. And that play actually has, she has a very good friend, a neighbor, who is a young Mormon housewife. So I have little things like that kind of show up here and there. And I write a lot about religion is a theme in a lot of my plays, but this is probably the only one that is straight up, hey, look at me, I'm Mormon.
Do you have these published, Melissa?
I've had a lot of productions at the academic level at universities. Martyr's Crossing is going to get produced this upcoming year at a little community theater in Washington State. And it has had a reading, an equity actor reading at the Workshop Theater in New York City two summers ago. Usually with plays, there's a certain level of production. It's got to be really well produced a lot, very popular in the production circuit before it gets published. Martyr's Crossing is actually getting published in a collection of LDS plays called Saints on Stage this coming year. I believe from Zarahemla Books. And then Little Happy Secrets is getting published as part of a collection of short plays that were produced by the New Play Project in Provo. They're wonderful publishing houses, but they're both really small.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know originally one of the main reasons why I wanted you to come on to our show today was to help promote this fundraising campaign that you're having for Little Happy Secrets to hopefully raise enough funds to put it on a stage in Salt Lake City. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes. My friend Dave Mortensen, who is a theater producer, and he and I worked together on a show I did last summer called Standing Still Standing, which is a non-traditional romantic comedy. And he, we had a really good working relationship, and he came to see the production we did of Little Happy Secrets last spring. And he and I have talked about trying to get it out to a wider audience, that it was great that we did it in Provo, but it'd be great if we could do it in Salt Lake. Wouldn't it be great if we could do it in California? Wouldn't it be great if we could do it, you know, all sorts of places. And Dave is, he's very ambitious, and he's got, you know, he's got big plans. And he came to me with this idea, this website that he found called Kickstarter.com. And Kickstarter is this fabulous program where you can basically create your idea, and you pitch it to whoever visits the Kickstarter website, and they have the opportunity to pledge. And if you, what you do is when you pitch your project, you set it up with a, you kind of have a goal that you want to meet by a certain day that we're going to try to make. Our goal is to make $4,500 by August 1st. And that $4,500 will go completely toward production costs for doing Little Happy Secrets in the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in Salt Lake City next February is what we would like to do. And so what it is you can, the way the program is set up is you can make a donation at any level from anywhere from $1 to $1,000, emphasis on the $1,000. and we have rewards that we give at certain levels. Like I think if you do a $50 pledge, I will autograph a soft back copy of the play for you. Hey, hey. I think if you do a $500 pledge, you and I get to go to dinner. It's very exciting. And so there are like rewards, and you can make, and you know, we're giving away tickets. We're hoping to have an opening night gala on the, when the show opens. And, or you can just donate. You don't have to take the prize if you don't want to. But the interesting catch with Kickstarter is that nobody's pledge actually gets cashed. The money doesn't actually get collected unless we meet or surpass the goal. So we don't actually, the project, if we don't make, if out of the $4,500 we make $44.99 by August 1st, the project doesn't happen.
I see. Well, we'll be sure to put that link up on our website at mormonexpression.com, and hopefully some of our audience members.
That would be fantastic.
We'll contribute to that, because I think it'd be really cool and exciting to see that on the stage in Salt Lake. That'd be cool.
And so, and our hope is to, if we do the Salt Lake production, is to get some people involved, not just to transplant the Provo show to Salt Lake, but, you know, to get together some people, maybe some LDS folks and maybe some non-LDS folks together to put the show up and make it, you know, just to try to make it as professional and just as great a show as we can possibly make it.
So just as a, just because I'm kind of new to the play scene, I mean, I've seen, what's that? Les Miserables. Is that a play or is that like an opera? What would you
call it? It's, I would call it an operetta, but a lot of people would say it's a musical. Yeah. It's musical theater.
All right. I'm new to the scene. So sorry.
You are totally not a problem. You're totally welcome. I hope you stay a while.
But I was thinking about this, you know, to hear your passion in writing plays and getting this message from out of your brain and out of your heart and onto a stage. What's that feeling like of something that's deep inside you and then being able to go through that extensive creative process, seeing it on stage and being and watching it being performed and then hearing the audience reaction? What's that like?
It is an incredible high, and it doesn't have, you know, icky side effects. So, like, you know, my drug experience is varied and wide. gentlemen, that was a joke. All right. Yeah. but it's an incredible, rush. Cause I mean, if you think about it, there is so much work that goes into putting up a show. I mean, I don't think a lot of people, when they go to the movies, when you go see a movie and you just say, oh my gosh, that was the worst. That was a waste of 2 hours of my life. Yeah. If it's a bad movie, it's actually a waste of hundreds of hours of a lot of people's lives. And that's the way, like, to put a show up is, you know, you have to get together a design team. You have to get together some really fabulous actors. You have to do, you know, there's a lot of preparation. You've got 6 weeks of rehearsal. I don't know how many hours it took me to write the thing. You know, there's a lot of stuff that builds up to this place. And when it actually happens, that feeling, it's almost, yeah, it's almost a kind of ecstasy. It's a pretty amazing feeling because I just turn around and do it again. I will go through all of that again and do it all over again because that feeling is such, it's just such a pure high to be able to say, this is the art that I have and I'm giving it to people. And when people react to it and when they, sometimes even when they react poorly to it, you know, it's still, there's a reaction, there's an emotional reaction. Even if people say, your play made me so angry, I'm like, that's great. There's an emotional thing happening. Say, bring it on. that feeling can't be recreated by anything else. I mean, maybe a really good cheeseburger for about 3 minutes. You know?
Yeah.
But maybe, and that it has to be a really, really good cheeseburger. But that that high is just so incredible that, yeah, I mean, I've got 8 plays that have been produced in some form, and I'm hoping to have more, because you just, that feeling doesn't come from anything else. And it just kind of, it's, because it has to be a really good play is a conversation between the playwright and the actor and the audience. It has to be, there's something about it being live that it's going through all of you at the same time. And yeah, you just can't, there's no other way to recreate that feeling than to have it happen. And it's totally worth all of the stuff, all of the crap you have to walk through, all of the work you have to do, all of the hours pacing around worrying whether or not anyone's going to come, right. All of those things, because that feeling is just pretty fantastic.
Yeah, imagine so. I mean, I made my wife listen to this play, The Little Happy Secrets, and she's like, "Let me get this straight, Tom. You like plays now?" and I was like, "Yeah." It's weird because originally I took her to that Les Mis. I think it was while we were still dating or engaged, you know, to try to seal the deal.
Like, so impressive that you're cultured.
Yeah, I can try. I'm an open-minded guy. You can come to a football game with me. I'll go to a play or an operetta with you. But it's kind of fun to listen to a play, and it kind of gets her pretty excited. Like, hey, all right. So if it just so happens to be your play, Melissa, The Little Happy Secrets, then that's something.
I that's my favorite thing ever. If we can do the show and your wife can come and be happy, I'll be so happy.
Yeah, me too. But
well, I've got a burning question that you might hate.
Oh, okay.
But
yeah, bring it. It's already fun. Yeah.
In the sequel to Little Happy Secrets.
Wait, is this a spoiler alert? Spoiler alert.
Yeah. I'm trying not to make it a spoiler alert, but Where is Claire? What kind of a is Claire still in the church? Is she out of the church? What kind of life is Claire living?
I see Claire actually. I don't know if it's necessarily in the sequel, but I see her at the beginning of the play, 5 to maybe 5 or 6 or 7 years after the events have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think she's left the church. I don't think she will ever leave the church. I think that she is, I think she's happy. I think she's well. I don't think she is whole, but I think she's found a way to make her life as complete as she can with what she has.
Has she found love, or is she living alone with cats?
Now we've delved into a whole new level of cliche.
Yeah.
I think that she's alone, but that she is very close with her family. I don't think she's lonely. And I didn't see her in my mind having cats, no. She's a reader, she's into literature. I see her eventually someday, maybe. Maybe writing, but she reads a lot. And she's found some kind of a job where she's able to take her passion for books, for literature, and build her life around that. And so I think she's pretty content is a good word for it, but no cats.
Okay.
Well, since we're asking questions about the play, maybe we'll edit this out because of spoilers, but so Brennan,
uh-huh.
When she puts that little note in the wedding invitation, because I still wonder about that. Was that legit? I mean, was she trying to reach out? I mean, does she have her own conflict?
Well, what I wanted to do with the play, and let's see if we can do this spoiler free. Let's see if we can do this spoiler free.
Yeah, maybe okay. We'll have to cut that. Yeah.
We might have to cut this out. I don't know. But what I was trying to do with the play was I wanted it to be – there are a couple of things that from a dramatic perspective I was trying to achieve with it. One of those is that if you look at the play on the page, like if you see it printed out, there are only two places where there's stage directions, where there's actually stage directions are where the playwright tells the actor and the directors, this is the action that I want to have happen during this scene. And what I tried to do with this play was make all of the action clear through the dialogue and say, because you could tell from the conversation what is happening in the scene. That was a goal that I had. And so there's two places, there are only two places in the whole play where I actually specifically say, these are the stage directions. This is what is supposed to be happening action-wise. One of the other things I tried to do was I wanted to make the play a little ambiguous in the way it was presented so that one director could make some really interesting choices that would be very different from what another director chose to do. And with the character of Brennan, I think it's very clear in the play who Claire is and what Claire wants and how Claire feels.
Right.
And what I wanted to do with Brennan is make her a little bit more open to interpretation. And I actually think there are several different ways that she could be played. And the scene that you're talking about, the moment that Brennan's at the very end of the show, I think could go a number of different ways. And I did that on purpose. So.
Yeah. And I thought you did that really well too. Yeah. We've mentioned the word cliche a couple times in the last hour we've been talking. And I think the Mormon lifestyle and those expectations, especially when you're at BYU, it's just one big cliche or maybe several small cliches, one after another. And I kind of saw that in the way that you presented her relation, Brennan's relationship with Carter, that, mm-hmm. They had these things that they kind of were interested in together, but they had all these other things, where are they going to live? What are they going to do? What kind of interest did they really have together? But they've got the wedding announcement on the nice paper and, the pictures and, everything kind of fits the cultural expectations or these cliches. And so that moment that Tom's asking about, that you said is open for interpretation, it could be that she's saying, I don't want to be in this cliche,
Yeah, that's definitely one of the possibilities.
Yeah.
And there are other possibilities. The possibility that she says, okay, maybe this is spoiler territory now.
Yeah.
But there's the possibility that she is saying, yes, I feel the same way.
Yeah.
Come and stop.
Yeah.
There's the possibility that she's saying, you are my best friend and I can't do this without you. There's the possibility that she is saying, you were totally right. This is all happening way, way, way too fast.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of different ways that it could happen.
Is it weird, Melissa, when you hear guys relating to this story? Because even I was a little taken back, like, am I connecting with a woman that has been lesbian issues? This is weird.
Well, you're a real guy, Tom. I'm the kind of guy that cries at Toy Story.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, don't make me laugh. I'll cough. That's an interesting question, because it was funny because when, like, those talkback sessions I mentioned, there was always a girl who wanted to ask about the stop me please, and there was always a guy who wanted to know why he was supposed to relate to a play about girls, which is, I know, not the context that you're asking the question in. I don't think it's weird. I think what I'm hoping makes the play universal is that it's specific. Because unfortunately with this idea of the coming out play, with this idea of a play that's dealing with a young person, or I don't know, age doesn't matter, I'm being ageist, with a person leaving the church because of their sexual orientation, there are so many plays where, like what I was saying about before, is it's a guy coming out of the closet and he leaves the church.
Right.
That story, because there are so many of them, that story has become cliche. Just the character of a gay man has become cliche. You expect him to be effeminate in his movements,
right,
to speak in a certain tone, to like Broadway musicals, to, be a fan of Barbra Streisand. There are all of these little cliches that we assign to him.
Right.
And I actually think that one of the things that I was hoping with this story, because firstly, there aren't a super lot of stories dealing with women dealing with this issue, and I know that there are women dealing with this issue in the LDS Church.
Yes.
But also, because it's a new spin on the old story, it's easier, I hope, to click into the universality. That's it. That's the word I'm looking for. Of it, to make it that you can relate to it and get connected to it, despite the fact that it's a woman. It would be actually very, very challenging to try to write the male counterparts to this story, because there are so many attempts at that that have already taken place.
Well, and I love the character Carter. I mean, I was like, that's cool. When he says, I got two words that'll put a smile on your face, cold stone. That was so Utah County. I laughed out loud.
I'm so glad. And the fact that he's like, hey, I got Thundercats on DVD.
Yeah, Thundercats. That was great, too.
So it's funny. I'm glad you like Carter, because that's a difficulty. I've had people tell me Carter is two-dimensional. And I'm like, well, it's all, you're seeing the whole thing. It's filtered through Claire's brain.
Yeah,
Claire definitely wants you to think that he's two-dimensional. Right. You know, she wants you to try to not like him. And so I think he is really likable, but it's not, is he marriage material? From what you see in the play, no. Right. Which is also, you know, it's also a commentary on people getting married way too fast at BYU.
Yeah.
So that's another cultural issue, but that's, you know, hey, woo, that's its own conversation.
Yeah.
But I like Carter. I think Carter's cute. I like Carter's name. I like they go to Burger Supreme, but then, you know.
Yeah, I could relate, because even my wife calls me two-dimensional at times, so.
Do you drive a Lincoln Navigator?
No. I guess that's where I separate, so yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. Because I also wanted to play around with the idea that Brennan is like, she wants to be a liberal, you know, she wants to be a Democrat because everybody else is a Republican.
Right.
But she's actually in a situation that requires her to be liberal, not from a political perspective, but literally in your thinking. She needs to be liberal and open-minded. She has difficulty with that. So, also just because I love the West Wing, too. There's just a lot of stuff in there that's just me. I like that. Let's put it in a play. Okay.
Yeah, right. Very cool. Well, if you were ever comfortable like sending some of the stuff that you've written, I'd love to read it. Like, your thesis... That play, I forget, the Church of Pinky or whatever it was, that sounded really interesting.
Oh, yeah, cool. I can send you that one. I'm trying to, I used to write mainly like historical plays, like things set in the Joan of Arc play. I also have a play that deals with Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn, you know, like dealing with heightened language period pieces. But I'm trying to write more contemporary modern stuff. And Pinky is a... So the Church of St. Pinky at Katy, Texas. It's in an early place. I've got some stuff that I got to work out with it. But, yeah, if you want to read it, sure.
I'd love to. Love to, yeah.
Quit schmoozing the guests, Glenn. Come on.
No, I'm just – I love this stuff. Yeah,
I'm so glad. I'm glad. Yeah. I think it's – yeah. And that was when I wanted to have a really – super long title. See, yeah. Sometimes, like, the logic behind writing stuff, like, makes no sense at all. It really doesn't. I mean – like, wouldn't it be cool if I had a play called The Church of St. Pinky at Katy, Texas?
Yeah.
That was before, you know, I had no story at all. I was just like, that's just a really cool title. It's cute.
It is a really cool title. Yeah.
So titles are hard for me. I have a hard time with titles. I really am pleased. Little Happy Secrets is like, it's a killer title, and that doesn't happen very often for me. Yeah. And it was just kind of like, ooh. It came out, it didn't have a super lot of drafts, and it had a fantastic title right away. And I was like, oh, this is one of those things I really can't take credit for. Okay.
Very cool. Cool. Well, it looks like we are just about out of time. Melissa, I commend you for writing such a well-done play, getting a sports guy like me to listen to it and enjoy it. I'm looking forward to you getting enough money to getting that on the stage in Salt Lake City so I can be in the audience and participating in the standing ovation. I think that'll be great.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the show. Do you have any last words, you, Glenn?
No, I just, same thing. Loved it. It was fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Can I make one last little plug?
Absolutely.
I have another show that's happening actually at BYU coming up this March. I've written a stage adaptation of Jane Austen's novel Persuasion, and BYU is going to be producing it in the Pardo Theater in March of next year.
Excellent.
So, yeah. So that just recently became official, so I'm looking forward to that. And so if folks want to go see it, I think it's going to be a good show.
Cool.
Most excellent. All right.
And hopefully, yeah, hopefully Little Happy was going to happen as well. And, you know, I'll just cross my fingers now and leave them crossed until February.
Very cool. All right. And thanks again for joining us. The discussion continues at MormonExpression.com, where we'll have the links, how you can help contribute to getting Little Happy Secrets on the stage in Salt Lake City, and also catch Melissa's other projects that she's doing and her webpage and where you can listen to the play. And you can always mail us at mail@mormonexpression.com. Thank you very much.
Fabulous. Thank you very much. Cool. I should have done the whole interview like this. That would have been fun. Hey, friends, let's talk about... Anyway.
And I think I'm going to edit out the comment that I made about me commenting on your website, because as I was saying it, I started thinking, actually, this sounds like it could almost be a slam. Like, you've only got one comment up on the site. I didn't want to... So I got a little self-conscious as I was saying that.
It's funny because I've like started blogging recently, and I think blogging is really cool. But then, like, I'm like, come on, people, read my blog. Come on, comment.
Right,
comment,
right,
comment.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I appreciate the slam, though. I'm gonna have to go check out.
Jeez.
And anytime. I'm great. I'm great at inadvertently slamming the speculative autobiographers.
And see, this is good because now my head will stay small.
Right.
It's all good.